patreon.com/thewalkoffpodcast. $4 a month gets you in there.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
I was really hoping that the ship would be righted yesterday in Kansas City in that Jose Berríos start, buddy. Even just so that the avalanche of negativity in the comment section that we have gotten over the last few days could kind of be damned, if you will, right? Put up a dam, hold in that water.
Oh, we're damned, all right. Damned if you do, damned if you don't.
And now we are putting all of our hopes on the bearded dragon to end this little losing skid that the Blue Jays are on.
Hey, we were in our text chain with Heikami yesterday, and he put it nicely. Berríos still lowered his opening game ERA. So better than last year, right?
Better than last year. I even tweeted out during the game. I'm like, will the entire rotation one time through the order have a ERA over under 10.5? And then folks started doing the math, and Keegan Mathieson came out at the end of the game with a tweet that said currently the rotation is sitting at a 10.80 combined ERA. So Kikuchi needs to put up here if we're going to get the under on that. And yeah, definitely need to stop the bleeding.
Yeah. I mean, mailbag, we'll get to that, but yes. I mean, I'm not in panic mode, but I am in frustration mode.
Frustration mode.
For sure. So
frustration mode. Yeah. Welcome to the walk-off, everybody. This is a Monday morning mailbag on a Tuesday afternoon, maybe a little earlier in the Tuesday afternoon than normal. Adam and I have been trying to get up earlier and get this out a couple hours earlier.
You could say good evening today because it's still dark outside.
That's right. No one will know. So every single week we comb through all of your interactions. Of course, there's plenty of that in the Discord. We'll actually give an example of some of the stuff you can see in the Discord in today's mailbag. If you would like a link, please reach out. Just DM us, private message us on Instagram or Twitter or wherever you'd like to reach out to us, and we'll send you a link. You can also follow us on Twitter at Walk Off Podcast and send us a DM or shoot us a tweet that way. Or you can follow us on Instagram and reach out over Messenger there. That's the Walk Off Podcast. Okay, let's get into it, buddy.
Okay, a lot to get to today. First one is a little teaser at what we're going to talk about later. Bo Bichette struggling defensively. But this first one made me laugh when I was sorting through the comments this morning. So Kit Jenkins says, move Bo to first. It did wonders for Vlad. So, short and sweet, and it made me smile. That's a perfect comment there, Kit. So thank you for that. All right. Next one comes in from Michelle Marie Beer, who commented during our long toss on Sunday. So shout out to Long Toss. It's back. Back, baby. Every Sunday. So Michelle Marie says, I hope the boys bring out a sequin covered poncho just to piss off all the I hate the jacket people. So like that.
Home run poncho.
Home run poncho. Yeah. Let's get it bedazzled. Ed Hardy bedazzled home run poncho. That's what we need. Okay. Ian said, I love having Long Toss back, but I miss Joel. Hey, Kami.
Well, we will definitely have Joel back on probably this Sunday. He's a busy boy. I want to take a second here to congratulate Joel on all of his successes over the last 6 months to a year. This dude has been a writer, a screenwriter for years, grinding away in Edmonton, Alberta. And he is just in the last 6 months, he's won awards at the Cannes International Film Festival. He is getting his stuff picked up on streaming services. He is being bugged by producers in the industry to scripts and pitch ideas. Just a real tip of the hat to Hey Commie and long toss regular Joel. He is kicking some butt out there. So great job, Joel.
Yeah. So Ian says he's a great counterbalance to the toxic positivity. So absolutely true. Great. You need a devil's advocate to bounce your arguments off of and really strengthen your side. So one thing I love about Joel is he is not afraid to take on five other people who are saying, hey, Oscar's a bum. And he'll defend his point against a whole room full of people. So I can't do that. I can't. I really crumple under the pressure. Like, I'm a Bo apologist. I'll own that. But when we're on long toss and it feels like, you know, four or five people are like, oh, let's bring Addison Barger up to play shortstop. I just end up biting my lip and I'm like, I'll just wait it out till the next topic starts. So kudos to Joel because he'll get right in there. He'll get his hands dirty. So,
yeah.
Okay. Long toss this Sunday. I have a challenge too. We hit about 70 for the long toss, which is pretty good for a 2-hour live stream. But if we get to 100 this week in our live stream, I'm going to get my mullet permed. That's the challenge I set forth. So if you,
for those of you watching right now, help us all send Adam back to the 80s.
There you go. And then we'll have to decide on how tight are we going to put these curls. And well, yeah, it'll be quite the April for me, I'm sure. So, okay. So next one, we're going to get to Twitter stuff. This is Anthony Rendon. You want to take over from here?
Yeah. So I made a smart mouth tweet on Twitter yesterday after it was announced that Anthony Rendon would be getting a 5-game suspension for his altercation with that Oakland fan. I don't know if those of you out there saw it, but as the game ended and Rendon is going back into the clubhouse, there was an Oakland fan that was yelling something at him, and he grabbed him by the collar and kind of gave it to him. So I tweeted out, 5 games for being a bitch. If Rendon confronts me about this, I'll just yell at him. I never tweeted it, and then sit back and watch him take a 10-game suspension. So that's pretty much what happened, right? Is like, I guess some guy in the stands called him a bitch, and then he grabbed him and was like, did you call me a bitch? I'm not a bitch. And then the guy's like, I didn't. And he's like, you did. Anyways, obviously this is a confrontation that should not happen. The frustration of the Angels boiling over in Game 2, which is makes you pull your collar a little bit there. But then Kikuchi's beard tweeted at us and he was like, will this A's fan have more actual impact on Major League Baseball this season than the actual Oakland team? Question. And that just made me smile. So did you happen to see that altercation?
Oh yeah, I did. Thoughts? Okay, so I mean, we can start with this. Anthony Rendon is the millionaire. The fan is the person who's the reason he's a millionaire, right? Mm-hmm. They're the ones paying the tickets. I mean, I think we've gotten into this before, but might as well revisit it. How do you feel about what limitations should be placed on fans for interactions?
I think there is a general courteousness in the world these days that has been eroded away. I think people are a little bit more in your face than maybe they used to be. I think the fan probably did say something shitty to him. Yeah. And I think in a normal circumstance, what happened probably should have happened. But like, you really framed it, man. This is a Major League Baseball player who is being paid $250 million. If you can't take some freaking random loser in Oakland calling you a bitch as you walk out, like,
to be clear, that's half of Oakland's fans. One out of every two Oakland fans that were at the game. it's
like 5-game suspension. This just hurts the Angels. This just hurts the Anaheim Angels, who are already back against the wall with their fan base ready to riot because they're just not a good team, even though they've got two of the best players in the world, right? So why are you adding to gas to this fire so early? He should have just shut his mouth and moved along. Now, that said, there is the saying, right? F around and find out. And the fan kind of did there. But that said, did he teach that fan anything? Is that fan doing anything but bragging to everyone he knows right now that he got Anthony Rendon suspended for 3% of the season?
Good math. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm a believer in that, like, as far as fan behavior goes, they don't have like a no limitations license to be abusive, right? Don't throw batteries. You can't resort to physical violence in either direction. Right?
Let's leave racial slurs in the dark corners of the internet. You know,
this is the thing, is a fan shouldn't say anything that they shouldn't say anyways. Right. So the homophobia, the racial stuff, any sort of bigotry at all, not acceptable. Right. And fans should be also held accountable. Right. Security should take someone that's in that situation and do their own. You know, each ballpark can handle it how they want. If it's a lifetime ban or it's a whatever, right? That's up to the ballpark, I think. But to boo or to call someone a bitch or a pussy or, you know, sorry for all the bad language I'm bringing out here, really showing my potty mouth. But I don't even think that fan should be in trouble for just heckling.
Yeah.
Like, you got to be allowed to heckle at a sporting event.
It's just
especially like, the other team.
It's 2023. Everyone has a camera on them. Like, I don't even understand Rendon's thinking. Like, you lost. You just lost. You're literally going to the clubhouse. Let it go, man.
Yeah. What I guess it's easy for me to say watching it and not being the one with my collar being pulled through a railing. But if you're going to call someone a name or heckle them, you should own it. Like once they did get in each other's face and Rendon's got his shirt halfway through the collar and he's like, "You called me this." You can hear the fans say, "No, I didn't."
Yeah.
And Rendon's like, "Yeah, you did." And then tried to smack him.
"You called me a bitch." He's like, "I said you're rich. You're rich." Not as rich after the suspension.
But I think the young lad should have just been like, "Yeah, you're." I mean,
at that point, exactly. Go for it.
Yeah, go for it. Right. Get your money's worth. Right. Like
maybe Rendon actually hits you, and then you can make a bunch.
Now you're rich. Yeah. No. I mean, again, it's different when it's like, to be clear, I'm not saying that like I would stand toe to toe with some professional athlete in any circumstances and own my heckles. But in that particular instance where you're 5 feet over him, like there's no real threat of
anything.
Even if he slaps you in the face, like, it's not it's not like courtside at an NBA game where you're on level ground and a rumble's going on or something. I don't know. It's just, but I don't know. Yeah.
The whole scenario was
it's embarrassing for everybody.
It was embarrassing. Like, my goodness, you're a professional athlete. Grow up, dude. Like, that's how I truly feel, you know? I mean, it's an Oakland fan. They're already hurting enough.
Well, newsflash for Anthony Rendon. He's going to get told he sucks a lot over the course of this season. So
that's the thing, right? It's only going to make the heckling worse everywhere he goes.
It's this, okay, for any kids that are watching, this is like bullying 101, right? It's like, if you show them how easily you get egged on, it's only going to encourage more bullies to be like, "Oh yeah, let's go after Adam because he is hilarious when he's getting teased."
Yeah.
So, Anthony Rendon, he's going to have a long season ahead of him. So,
target on his back now.
Is Anthony Rendon good?
He was. I think he still has it in him. He's definitely not $30 million a year good, but he's definitely could contribute to that Angels lineup. They're better with him in it than with the options on the bench.
Was great in Washington. A lot of MVP votes, couple Silver Slugger awards. Not looked good since coming to the Angels. So
boy, oh boy, isn't that the story of so many Angels players?
Yeah. Wild. Okay. Well, anything else to add on Anthony Rendon?
He's got suspended
and that won't get overturned, right?
Yeah. No, yeah. He's just going to take his medicine. Even if he did wish to appeal it, I guarantee the Angels are like, absolutely not.
All right, then. Let's pivot from there. True Blue Jays fan. But why did I read that weird? True Blue Jays fan. All the Jays fans are truly blue these days, I think.
Yes.
So they DM'd us on Twitter and said, boys, listen to the podcast. And you both said almost 100% chance Whit Merrifield being in the lineup tonight in his return to Kansas City. And then guess what? The lineup was released and no Whit. Not to mention Chris Beck was released the day after Adam said he'd for sure see times with the big club. First off, what happened? Why no Whit? Secondly, can you predict the Royals to sweep the Jays? There's some sort of a reverse jinx we got to be using to our benefit. So,
yeah,
hey, we also called Bo Bichette would have a massive step forward defensively this year.
Yeah, so we are really on a streak here. Strike three, I think. Strike three after the Whit comment. Yeah, what happened with Whit Merrifield? I don't know. That's actually a weird one to me. I really did think that John Schneider would give him that first game back in Kansas City since the trade, just to kind of soak up the cheers and stuff right away. My guess is he's in the lineup today. He is going to play in this series, obviously. If anything, this proves Adam and I don't know anything. Some guys, some analytics, you know, some sports broadcasters have the inside track. We just have a track. And so
we just have a track. Sometimes it's paved better than other times. I guess it is a 4-game series, so that's worth just as far as the why wasn't Whit in the lineup yesterday. 4-game series. I don't think he was going to play all 4 games. I don't know. It is weird though that he wasn't in for the first game. Just from a like tip of the cap kind of a standpoint, you know,
soak it up idea, you know, like he walks in for the first time and I was a little surprised,
you know, like if you're going to give Alek Manoah the opening day ball, that tells me that at least to some degree, this management team is like a little bit in favor of like those honorary moments, right? Of like,
Yeah,
let's just give this kid something special. And so it was just weird. First time back in Kansas City.
Although Biggio was the guy that got the start at second. Maybe it was just trying to get that lefty bat, one extra one in the lineup.
Yeah, it could be. I don't know. Not that this should ever really factor in, but I feel bad for any of the Whit Merrifield fans in Kansas City who bought tickets for that game.
Yes.
Or like, hey, Whit's back in town. I got my Whit Merrifield jersey. I'm going to go see. And then he's on the bench. And it's just like, man.
Now, one thing that Ben Nicholson Smith brought up yesterday on Tim and Friends that was just such a light bulb went off in my brain as he brought it up. And it was just, it really does give John Schneider a very viable bench option for a lot of different scenarios when Whit isn't playing second base, right? When Whit is on the bench, it does allow that very capable hitter off the bench in case you need to drop down a bunt, in case you need to definitely make contact. Merrifield is a contact hitter. It also allows you to put in a pinch runner with a guy who has exceptional speed and very good base running acumen. And on top of that, it allows you to make some defensive switches because Whit is very versatile and can play in numerous positions. So if you do need to switch a guy out, having Witt on the bench is a good thing. That said, I still don't know why in his return to Kansas City, he didn't get the start, but it is what it is. And again, he is going to play. So they are going to get a chance to cheer Whit Merrifield, their lone bright spot for years in Kansas City.
One thing that I don't know if I'm just feeling this more than usual, but it feels like John Schneider is going with a pinch runner more often already than I've seen from the Blue Jays in a decade. Like, it does feel like there is several opportunities where, you know, it's the middle of the game and Kirk hits a single and now we got Nathan Lucas going into pinch run. And then some like fancy defensive substitutions with Cavan coming in to replace Lucas and Jansen going into the game to, you know, it's just, it's I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
It's a little bit more managerial fingers in the pie with old Schneid's there.
That's I don't know. This is the one thing with Kirk, right? Is that he can't run to save his life. As much as we all love watching him go first to third, you can't help but wonder in that same moment, if that was Kiermaier, if that was Merrifield, if that was any one of our faster guys, are they maybe scoring?
We're four games into the season. There's already been two scenarios that I can think of where Kirky's round and second coming into third. And I'm like, anyone else would score. Anyone else.
Right. So those are runs.
Maybe,
right?
Maybe shouldn't be going, but he would.
Vladdy had a stolen base yesterday.
Yes, he did. And
on a vacant third base. Yeah.
Awesome. I just love how vacant third was. And he was like, screw you guys, I'm taking it. Like,
what? and then immediately walked halfway home because there was still no third baseman holding him on.
Yeah.
I love it. Love that stuff. Vladdy is so much fun. I love everything about the player that Vladdy is. Okay. Anything else to add on last night's game before we move on to the next part?
Flush that turd. Like, just.
Yeah.
I don't even wish to think about it.
Some teams get the brooms out, right? Hey, we're going for the sweep. We're busting out the plungers. Hey, flush that turd down.
Flush that turd.
All right. That merch, get your walk off plunger at the website this week. Okay. You got a screenshot from Discord that you sent me.
Yeah.
That made me laugh out loud. Do you want to read this?
Absolutely. So honestly, I wish to read this so that everyone watching right now who has maybe thought about joining the Discord but just doesn't really know what it is gets an idea of what it's all about. So this is under the game day chat. So we've got a bunch of different
subcategories
basically. And maybe it seems a little daunting when you first go into it. You just need to picture it like a audio mixing board, right? That there's a ton of strips, but once you just know what one strip does, you know what they all do, and that's basically what it is. So this is in the game day chat. The Blue Jays were down 7-2 at this point, and this is kind of how the conversation went. Original Chappie had just hit the double, okay? Original Blunt Smoking goes, Chappie is such a beauty. Mr. Krister says, can confirm that no one has adopted Chapman yet. Mustard Tiger, I adopted Barrios. Mr. Krister, all we need to do was hit their pitcher in the nuts, and he gives us balls. And then Original Blunt Smoking responded to at Mustard Tigers, I adopted Rios, and he said, sort him out. Then Zero Day pipes up, and he goes, KK, with the bases loaded. Mustard Tiger, there's a store near my house called Pet Traders. I'm going to see if I can trade Barrios in for a turtle. Moisey got banned, says, if only it was a 3-run lead. So as you can tell, everyone's all over the place, but I love it. And that pretty much sums up our Discord. In a nutshell.
Yeah. I'm just in the Discord now reading. It's divided into all sorts of categories. Blue Jays stuff, memes, general game day chats. We have a fantasy baseball league going on. A couple days ago, I mentioned eggnog being out for Easter. And Mustard Tiger went up and picked up a carton. So they posted a picture of their Easter eggnog in the Discord. So anybody that was wondering, Easter eggnog is a thing.
What's really cool about the Discord is that when Adam and I first started it, there was about 15 people that joined, and it really wasn't self-sufficient without Adam and I pushing at it. And now as it's pushing 300 members, like Adam and I don't even go in there half the time, and it's just nonstop. I love it so much.
Yeah.
Anyways, if you would like a link to the Discord, please reach out on Twitter or Instagram, get a hold of us. We'll send you one right away. And the only reason we do it that way and don't leave it wide open is it just leaves a little bit of accountability on the people joining to not be shitheads.
Yeah, we're not Anthony Rendon. We don't need you to call us names, right? Yeah. All right. Okay, now we're going to get into the fun stuff.
Yes, okay.
Boba Fett, divisive, to say the least. Okay, I want to preface all this Boba Fett talk with 2 points. Okay?
Yeah.
First point is, and I heard this on the Chris Rose and Trevor Plouffe podcast this morning. I can't think of the name of it. Talking Baseball or Chris Rose Rotation, something. Anyways, Chris Rose says, it's April 4th. We don't need to preface every statement we make with small sample size or it's still early, but like, yes, that's implied. If you're here watching Baseball Talk on April 4th, take everything we say as if it's small sample size or it's still early or whatever, right? If otherwise, just don't watch Baseball Talk. Come back in June when it's no longer small sample size. That being said, for Boba Fett and his defensive struggles, not small sample size. This is 4 years of sample size at this point, right? But we'll get into this with some actual comments here. Obviously, we talked yesterday about Boba Fett, comments Kevin Barker made on the Blair and Barker podcast with Sportsnet.
By the way, I do wish to qualify here that we got, I bet you, I know Adam said it, we were pushing 200 comments specifically on Bo Bichette. So we really appreciate all the interaction and stuff. And let me believe you, like it's a rainbow of opinions on the man. Mm-hmm. So we're going to try and cherry pick the ones that represent as many people as possible.
So yeah, if we read a comment and you're like, hey, I basically said that, why didn't they read mine? It's just dumb luck. I don't know. Better grammar in the one I picked, I guess. So Sean Richards says, give me a break. Bo could easily win World Series MVP.
Yeah. I mean, I really agree with you 100%.
Yeah, Bo could definitely have a 7-game stretch where he throws zero errors and hits 450.
I mean, he's basically hitting 400 right now on the season. Yeah.
So
he's an incredible talent. He is an incredible talent. And we have never doubted that Bo Bichette has superstardom capabilities.
Yes.
And when it comes to the offensive side of the game, the dude is a stud and he's been proven it since last September. And really, I mean, he led the league in hits the last 2 years. So you can even kind of argue he's proved it for 2 full years. Yes.
So next one comes in from Oliver, says, oh, now that I'm reading the full name here, I think this is a troll name. Oliver Klozov. I don't think this is one of our Russian fans, but
You're Mo at the bar with the Simpsons when Bart calls right now.
Yes. So Oliver Klozov says, I'm not arguing for Bichette, but young shortstops make more errors early in their career. That's true. I do agree with that. And that's what I've been saying as my Bo defender stance all off season, was that he's coming into his age 25 season. That is historically. And I ran down the list of all the gold glove shortstops, a few months ago on a long toss. And it is hilarious how consistently the age 25 season is a major milestone for many of the
defensive top shortstops. Step forwards. Yes.
But then they use Derek Jeter as an example and say Jeter used to make 60 errors in the minors. So I agree with the argument. I reject the evidence because I looked into this. Derek Jeter had one season at age 19 where he made 56 errors.
In double A.
In double A. It is not fair to compare a 19-year-old and say, see, young players make errors. That's ridiculous. So you lost me there. But I do agree, young players. And that's why, I've been frustrated, I think, by Bo. Again, early sample size or whatever. But like, I really wanted to see him take that next step. So to just to immediately be on the here we go again.
Yeah.
It's frustrating. I'm not panicked on him. The season isn't a write-off yet. I don't quite feel as strongly as Kevin Barker that like we can't sugarcoat it anymore.
Yeah.
He is what he is, you know. That could be one of 10 errors that he makes all season long. And it just so happened that it was at the start of the season. You know, it's like we talk about all the time when a guy starts the season 0-for-20 and how painful that feels for the first week and a half, as opposed to having an 0-for-20 stretch in August, right? Where you go, well, he's still hitting 270 on the year. You're not panicked, right? So it's unfortunate timing.
I'll put a little bit of positive spin on this too. It is impressive because it is a very well documented scenario in baseball where when you're struggling defensively, it bleeds over into the offense. And you know what? Bo has not let that happen this season. I mean, truly has been one of the few guys in this lineup who has consistently hit all four games and he is putting up big numbers. And so there is something to be said for that. I even have hope that he truly still can be an average defensive shortstop, maybe even this season. And what gives me hope is that it feels like when you're watching him, it's between the ears, right? It's a brain thing. It's a decision-making thing. And that hopefully that can be smoothed out with coaching and hounding him to remember how to play the game the right way.
Next comment related to this, Michael Milne says trade deadline shades of Nomar Garcia Parra, then adds, but who is better? It's not like there's an excess of Lindors or Correas out there. So two good points to be had here. Bo Bichette is still a top 10 shortstop. Like all things considered, easily top 10. I would make an argument he's one of the top five in baseball. Like it's a short list of shortstops elite I would rather have than Bo Bichette.
They're out there. They're out there.
His defense might be more insufferable because of how good his bat is, right? It makes it easier to nitpick all those things. The Nomar Garcia Parra comparison. I remember Nomar.
Oh, yeah.
In the late 90s, early 2000s. Rookie of the Year, Silver Slugger Awards, like six-time All-Star. A lot of errors playing shortstop for the Red Sox. In 2000, here's an eye-popping stat for you, okay? So in his 14-year career batting average of .313.
Wow.
Very nice. Over 1,400 plus games. Can you tell me, and I hope you didn't cheat, but in the year 2000 was his career high for batting average, okay? Within 10 points, tell me what his batting average was in the year 2000. Here's a hint. He led AL. He led the American League in batting average in the year 2000. .355.
.372. Wow.
He hit almost .400 across 140 games. That's nuts. He hit 357 the year before.
How many errors did he have that year?
In the year 2000, good question. In the year 2000, and I know people are going to complain that errors is not the best indicator of someone's defensive prowess. 18 errors that year. Fielding percentage of 971, though. So, yeah, he consistently, during his time with Boston, was pushing 20 to 25 errors. He has a couple seasons around 25 errors with the Red Sox before becoming a first base DH with the Dodgers and Cubs there in Oakland towards the end of his career. So interesting comparable there. Nomar Garciaparra. The other point, though, there's not a lot of options. And this is what I kind of want to end on with this.
Yes. There's not a lot of internal options. And the truth is, there aren't a lot of options major league wide. So what do you do? And this might be part of the I really do believe that this aspect of the Bo Bichette defense quagmire is what makes it so tough to palate, you know, is so unpalatable to Jays fans. Is it's like, what do we do? So you're kind of trapped in this scenario of like, there's nothing we can do this year. There really isn't. They're going to strut Bo Bichette out there all year. We are probably going to talk about this dozens of more times throughout the season. It's going to annoy every single one of us. Believe me, Adam and I were truly hoping that Bo would at least start the season admirably defensively, so we didn't need to go down this freaking rabbit hole we're in every single season, it feels like. But here we are.
Here we are. I think it's crazy talk to think about Addison Barger coming up and being our actual shortstop. I'm high on Addison Barger as a prospect and someone who can help in the future. Maybe even this year at some point.
Maybe he
can play second base for us or be a weird platoon in the outfield or something. Or fill in for Bo if there's a stretch. It's crazy, though.
It's wild to think a rookie would come up and play a better shortstop than a guy who's been in the majors for 5 years and who isn't going to struggle with the bat. And I honestly do believe Barger is a major league player waiting to happen. I don't know.
If we weren't right in the middle of when we're like, we got to win.
Yeah.
Like if this was 2019 still, 2020, and we were still like, if we're the Baltimore Orioles right now, when we had
Barger
time
would be
to like
up.
Figure these things out, then yeah, bring them up and make these transitions. Santiago Espinal is another name that gets thrown out as he's a better shortstop. Do you know? Okay. I'm looking at Santiago's career games. He has played 249 games in Major League Baseball. How many have been at shortstop?
I was just going to say, I can't wait to hear. I have no idea. Can I guess?
Yes, please. Yeah.
20.
32. But still, like nothing. He's played like no games at shortstop. Mm-hmm. He looks great at second base.
Yeah.
He has looked good. He has a 980 fielding percentage and has only made two errors in those 32 games. But again, to just think that, we could just swap those two out and things will be
fine. Problem solved.
It's not like a guarantee that all of a sudden Espinal is not going to make 20 errors over the course of 162 games. You know?
Now, I truly believe that Espinal would play a better shortstop than Bo Bichette, but Adam does bring up a very good point that a 30-game sample size over his... When did the Blue Jays bring him up? 2020?
2020.
So over his 3-year big league career, and I know I'm putting you on the spot here. I doubt it's probably even... it'll take you a second, but how many minor league games did he play at shortstop? You know? Does that 3-year span where he hadn't played any shortstop, is that going to make him rusty? My guess is yes. Does he find it? Probably. And yes, Santiago Espinal is a excellent defender, and there is a reason why he is on this team, because he is so versatile with where he can play, and because his glove is as close to a sure thing as you can get out of your utility guy.
Okay, so Espinal has 221 career games at shortstop in the minor leagues. 162. No, I'm doing this backwards. He has 37 errors.
Okay.
In 221 games. So what's that on a 162 pace? I know.
And this is in the minor leagues.
This is in the minor league. So like, whatever. I know it's not an apples to apples comparison, but
so he's going to average what, 25 errors 20, a year when he was in the minors?
27 errors if you pace that over 162, and a fielding percentage of only 960. So I don't think
he's better than he's far better now than he was in the minors. So this we know this isn't an apples to oranges. All that Adam and I is saying is that if there was a super obvious answer to this question, I think the Jays would have already done it.
Moving Bo Bichette and if John Schneider was to come out tomorrow and say Bo Bichette is now our full-time second baseman and Espinal is our full-time shortstop, there just isn't any evidence that conclusively convinces me that's an improvement defensively at shortstop. There's the hope, and I get that, but Espinal does not have a proven track record that he can handle shortstop duties at the major league level.
Yeah,
there's indications that he could, but it's not conclusive. And it's once you make that switch, there's no going back. There's no Espinal's going to play shortstop, and then he implodes through April, May, and June, and we go, oh, Bo Bichette actually was maybe not even better, but like good enough where we didn't have to have Espinal's bat in the lineup every single day because of like Bo Bichette's bat is not coming out of the lineup. So if he's playing second base, he's our second baseman for 160 games. And that means Espinal is our shortstop for 160 games. This is the comparison that needs to be made, is that right now we're in a situation where Bo gets to be in our lineup every day at shortstop and Espinal gets to be in our lineup as a batter 60 to 80 times this year.
No, everything you're saying, man, I love it. Like right now, John Schneider has the opportunity with the merry-go-round at second that he has, that he can literally put Espinal in when it benefits him the most.
Yeah, when the matchups work out. Yeah.
When the matchups work out the best. Now, if you move him to shortstop, and I think this is a very important point to take out of this, is that his bat isn't good enough for his defense to not be elite at shortstop, right? Like there are everyday shortstops whose bat is around what Santiago Espinal's is, right?
Sure,
like,
but he's not Dansby Swanson.
Andrelton Simmons, exactly. Andrelton Simmons, Dansby Swanson. Like these are guys, right, that Swanson's bat's probably a little better, but you know, like Andrelton Simmons is incredible defensively. And so you can justify having him in the lineup 155 games a year, even though he's probably below average offensively at that position. So to take us, it's like having Matt Chapman and Dalton Varsho. Yes, yeah. maybe when it comes to just pure getting on base or batting average, it's a little below the league average, but they have some power and defensively they're incredible.
I don't know. I think that first comment we let off sums it up nicely though, from Kit.
Move him to first.
Did wonders for Vlad. So, okay. Anything else to add here? I think,
I hope that Bo has a great rest of this series defensively, and we don't need to talk about this again until June.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be nice? All right, well, let's end on some more encouraging notes then. This is one that I like these questions, but I also hate answering them. So this one comes in from Darth Yen, who says, here's a new mailbag question. How will Adam Simber be used this year? Will it be set for him to take innings earlier in the games because of the addition of Eric Swanson, or later to separate Eric Swanson, Garcia, and Romano, whose similarities with high velocity arms, or Swanson, Garcia, Romano, so dissimilar that it won't matter and they pitch so close together? This is just,
yeah,
a complicated. There's no simple, if A happens and B happens, then we slot C into there. Like, this is why the analytics department is like a real
thing. I was just going to say, there are so many analytics involved in this question, and there's so many situational scenarios that would need to be determined before being able to answer this question. I do think that Adam Simber is most likely, depending on who the batter is and what's going on and where they are in the lineup and how many guys are on base, Adam Simber is going to be used earlier than he was last season. I think we can see him coming out in the sixth and seventh quite regularly, especially if you're doing it after a guy like Manoa or Gausman, because Simber is going to give you such a different look as that sidearm guy coming in. Adam Simber also induces a lot of ground balls. So I think in a scenario where there's a runner at first and a runner at second and you need a double play, Adam Simber is a dude that John Schneider is going to go to. And we could see him in some seventh and eighth inning scenarios, because when the game's on the line and you need that ground ball, he's totally one of the top of the list in that bullpen as to who you can bring in. Maybe Anthony Bass is a little higher on that ground ball list. But yeah, like Adam said, after reading it, I mean, really hard to answer this question. Love the question. Just really hard to answer it without a few more parameters.
And even if we had those parameters, full disclosure, Scott and I are not smart enough to read those tea leaves. Yeah, it's just, I mean, it's things like, yeah, he's our sixth, seventh inning guy. But then what happens when the sixth, seventh inning rolls around and it's their 1, 2, 3 batters? Maybe we go, hey, let's get Eric Swanson in because it's their better hit. Or maybe you don't. Or maybe it's a lefty righty situation at the sixth or seventh inning. Or maybe all of the indications are, hey, this is the perfect time to get Adam Simber in. And then you look at the analytics, say, yeah, but his splits on the road indicate he's not good against lefties on the road. He's good against lefties at home, but
yeah, even the guy at the plate, maybe he hits Simber well. You know, like there's so many different little nuggets of analytics that would go into this decision.
So, and maybe that's something to keep in mind when you're at home watching the Jays game, pulling your hair out at why is John Schneider putting this guy in now? Mm-hmm. It's almost, I would say almost certainly that there's some guy in khakis that have texted him and said, hey, this is the right guy to go to right now. Yeah. You know, like, so yeah, it's a fickle mistress, that bullpen. That's for sure. Okay. Last one, and then we'll get out of here, is from Jeffrey Harris, who says Danny Jansen's second injury. And this comment comes because I think this is our predictions episode last week. We were predicting over-unders and who plays more at catcher or whatever. Mm-hmm. Danny Jansen in my head is an injury concern. Right?
You're not alone.
He's not the catcher position in general, other than like JT Realmuto, you just don't see many catchers back there 130, 140 times a year anymore. Mm-hmm. Like it's a squad position at this point. Mm-hmm. Just like with goalies in the NHL, you know, you used to see more goalies playing 60, 70 games a year.
70 games,
and it's just a much more of a 50, 30, 45, 35 kind of a split. So it is what it is. But I think that's a factor in me thinking that Danny Jansen is, you just, when you look at his baseball reference, 31 games, 107 games, 43, 70, 72. So obviously the first season, 31, rookie season, called up midway, you know, like, yep, almost nobody has 150 in their first season, right? 2020, he played 43 games. That was the COVID season. So there was only 60 yes. there anyways.
He was almost a full-time catcher.
Almost yeah. full-time, right? Yeah, that's 120 plus games over the course of 162.
That was the year Kirky was called up.
There you go.
Because Danny was sucking the big one offensively.
Yeah. I can't remember the comment we got last week, but I was complaining that Baseball Reference and all their columns didn't have a injury history. You know, at the very right side, it says they were Silver Slugger. They were third in MVP votes. They all these things. And I wanted a breakdown of how many games they missed for what injury on that log line. And my apologies. Someone pointed out that Spotrac has a good injury tracker.
Nice.
So whoever that nameless hero is, I appreciate it. Went to Spotrac. I go to Spotrac all the time for contract details.
Yeah.
But here's the injury history. And this is broken down exactly how I want to see it for Danny Jansen. I just want all the stats next to it. But Danny Jansen so here's his complete injury history. He's missed time on four instances. The first one was 2021, hamstring injury, missed 4 weeks. Again, hamstring injury, missed 10 weeks. No, not 10 weeks. My math is off. 6 weeks the second time. Then last year, right out of spring training, oblique injury, missed 5 weeks. And then a broken finger, missed 5 weeks. So that's the comment. That's what the comment gets to here. Jansen's second injury last season was caused by a pitch that hit him in the hand. So not really his fault, but it adds to the aura that he missed time last year. And it was all because he's some sort of delicate flower. So
interesting enough too, the two hamstring injuries you brought up in 2021, because if you look at what was the distance between them?
20 days. I know where you're going with this and I love it.
Guaranteed it's the same injury. Guaranteed
he came back too soon. Yeah. And that's the thing with hamstring injuries. And that's why they're always something to worry about, is because it can just be something that nags at you all season long, especially as a catcher in that squat position with a hamstring. No thanks. So yeah, I'm looking at this and it's really two injuries over what, five seasons now? Like we're into the six, but yeah, 5.5 seasons.
Great
really
comment.
two injuries. So yeah, this is chef's kiss.
Yeah, thank you so much for bringing this up. And it's funny because Jays fans, we know this, right? Like you follow it along enough and there's enough of a time lapse between them, and all of a sudden it's 2023 and you're like, Danny Jansen's pretty injury prone.
Yeah,
but it's been injuries.
Yeah. And because of the way catchers are managed nowadays, league-wide, but especially with the Blue Jays, who love to have a timeshare at catcher.
I mean, you know, he's either been splitting the best catchers in the league.
And even when Danny came up, it was him and Reese McGuire before Reese McGuire fizzled out and was traded away, right? But it was the same thing. That was the plan, was, well, we're going to have these guys that can play 80-ish games each, right? One's a lefty, one's a righty. I mean, it didn't work out, but now we're in the same boat with Kirk, right? So, yeah, when you just quickly look at his baseball page, you go, oh, yeah, 70 games here, 70 games there. And then in the back of your mind, you're thinking, well, he is on the IL a lot. So it's an easy shortcut for your brain to make, even though you know better. But so, all right, let's let Danny off the hook. Maybe he's not such a delicate flower. I don't think I ever thought he was, but it is. I'm just hopeful. If we can get 90 to 100 games out of Danny Jansen this year, I'm going to be thrilled.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. A big thank you to all of you who have interacted with us over the week. We really do appreciate you folks, the grounds crew, if you will.
Grounds crew.
The walk-off listeners, thank you so much. At walk-off podcast on Twitter, if you do wish to reach out for next week's mailbag, feel free to drop us a DM. We always welcome the interaction. I love talking baseball, so it's never a pain in the butt. Don't hesitate to do so. The Walk Off Podcast on Instagram. Shoot us a message. We'll give you that Discord link and you can join the community and just get to the baseball chatter you need and you crave and maybe isn't in your life right now. Patreon. We have yet to mention you, but honestly, a very, very heartfelt tip of the hat to you, my friends. We truly do appreciate the support. A buck a week gets you all of the access to everything instantly. Audio as well now. Thank you to, I forget who it was that pointed out the audio wasn't coming up early on Patreon, but thank you to...
I think it was John Dick, I think.
Okay, to John, really appreciate it. And then trivia. We do it every month. Going to do it again at the end of April. You can get involved in that. There's prizes to be won, and this is all accumulating points for a jersey giveaway at the end of the season.
There you go. Okay. Bye, Scott. Have a good day. Bye to my dad.
Later, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Osborne with a drive. Cheese and cracker shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.